Friends, we're going to do the Sicha, Lekuti Sichas, Volume 11, the first Sicha of Parshas Bo. We're going to discuss the nuances of a Chakira. Chakira means an analysis of Jewish law, which is very much like Talmudic study. And I want to just point out that some people wonder, why is that important? We're not just discussing Jewish law, we're analyzing the origin of Jewish law. We're splitting the hair, and in today's section, we're splitting the hair and then we're splitting it again. We come up with two approaches, then we split two into three. Why is it so important? You know, Lahavdil, when one goes to study other areas of wisdom, for example, if I'm studying the sciences, I just need to know the conclusions of the scientists. I don't need to know how they came to those conclusions and why they came to those conclusions, and is this way and that way, which is what we do in Torah study, which is what you do in a yeshiva, really. That's what most of the study in a yeshiva, in addition to studying so you can know the laws, which is clearly important. Also, you study Torah for inspiration, but the vast majority of quantity time of Torah study in a yeshiva is Talmudic study, which is very much like this sicha, analyzing not the actual law, but the basis behind it. And is it like this? And is it like that? And if it's like this, it can also be divided in two ways. And there, and the later commentaries further subdivided. I mean, it's ad infinitum. Why is that important? The student of science, Lahavdil, doesn't need to know the reasons behind the scientific conclusion. It just needs to know the conclusion, unless he or she is looking to become a scientist themselves. And yet in Torah study, not everyone is planning to become a Torah scholar or a Torah sage or halachic decisor. And yet we all have a mitzvah to study Torah. In fact, it's considered the greatest mitzvah of all. And the explanation is, why is Torah study the greatest mitzvah of all? The purpose of mitzvahs is to connect us to God. Any mitzvah connects us to certain parts of our body. When we study Torah, our mind connects to God, which is clearly the greatest connection. And therefore, Torah study is the greatest mitzvah because it connects the most important part of us. If our mind connects to God, our thought process is much like God's. So in addition to the Torah study being a great mitzvah, as it says, Talmud Torah keneged kulam, the study of Torah overrides everything else because it teaches you how to do the mitzvahs. And also it gives you inspiration for mitzvahs. In and of itself, Torah study, even beyond those two, just Torah study for a hypothetical analysis. If the mitzvahs are there to connect you to God, Torah study connects you to the brain of God, so to speak. And think of ourselves as God's children. Imagine a child who never met their father, which is what the Golos is about. We wait for Mashiach and the redemption when we'll be reunited with our father. However, until then, our father communicates with us through his works. He gives us a book called Torah, and he tells us his likes and dislikes. And he gives us a lifestyle to live, which is in accordance with his wisdom, and we live accordingly. So even though we don't get to see Tati, we're very much in touch and in line with Tati. And every time we live our lives in accordance to our loving Father, we're living with Father, we're connected. However, being if it's a child-father relationship, you don't want to just know the conclusions. What would Daddy tell me to do at this time? But I want to know how Dad thinks. If you're in a close relationship with a person, you don't want to just know the bottom line. Tell me what you want. Tell me what I should do. But I want to know what makes you think. And that we only get from the study of Talmud or analysis, or the same thing as in the study of Chassidus, but in the more deeper, what we would call Iyun, investigative study, intense analytical study, which is very much like this Sicha that we're doing now, taking apart a law, finding the origin and the various ways and perspectives it can be taken at. What we're really doing is understanding God's thought process, because we want to get to know Tati. We want to know how he thinks, not just what the bottom line conclusion is. And even though, for example, in today's Sicha, there's going to be three ways to approach this law, but being that these three ways come from sages who opine based on the 13 principles of Torah, all three are God's thought process, even though one will become law in most cases, all three, and if there are five opinions and derivatives and later commentaries, all of them are worth spending time on because all of them are bona fide approaches of Torah, which really means all of them are thought processes of our Father in heaven and therefore considered to be the deepest connection to Hashem, the mind connection. Like a student and a teacher, they merge when their minds merge. So just giving this by way of introduction, I give this class to a group of Jews in my Chabad house, and they prompt me with these types of questions, like, why is this important? So I felt I should make this presentation. So today's Sicha is about the law of Yom Tov, how we observe Yom Tov, the holidays. We know that on Shabbat, we're not allowed to do any malacha. What is a malacha? Work. Work is not doesn't mean something that's hard or makes you sweat. The definition of work is the 39 malachas, the 39 laws of Shabbos as defined in the Torah based on how the temple was built. And on Shabbat, all of these 39 laws are prohibited. What about on the holidays? It's the same thing. The laws are prohibited. In fact, the holidays are referred to in the Torah as Shabbaton, as a form of Sabbath. And therefore, yes, they're also prohibited. But there's an exception. On the holidays, anything to do with food preparation becomes permissible because the Torah wants us to have joy on the holidays. On Shabbat, it's more about pleasure. On the holidays, the emphasis is joy. And it's not for now, but joy means it's more revealed, it's more experienced. And therefore, on the festivals, you are allowed to do any of the 39 laws that involve food preparation, because food preparation brings joy. You have to have a festive meals and you have to enjoy them. And therefore they're allowed on holidays. And that becomes the main difference between the holidays and Shabbat. While on both you're prescribed from doing melacha, the works, the exception is food preparation, which is permitted on the holidays. And this is based on a Torah verse in today's portion, Parshas Bo, where the Torah first introduces us to the concept of the holidays. Because it's the first holiday, the Jews are still in Egypt, they're about to leave, and they have to know how to celebrate Passover. So even before Sinai, the Torah introduces them to Pesach, and God says, you're going to have a holiday, and it's a seven-day holiday, but the first and the last day are holy convocations when you're proscribed from work. The middle day is a Chol HaMoed, so they're not proscribed from work. And we need to know the rules. And the Torah tells us right then and there, no work shall be performed on those days. However, work that involves food preparation is permitted. These laws are repeated again in the book of Leviticus, again in the book of Numbers, but let's focus on Leviticus when the Torah then, post-Sinai, gives us a collection of all the holidays in order. It talks about the laws of Shabbat, and then it goes through all of the holidays around the calendar cycle. And there too, it teaches us this distinction between holidays and the festivals. It words it a little bit differently. Over there it says, on Shabbat, don't do any work, period. When it comes to the festivals, it says, by Shabbat it says, lo tasa kol melacha, no work. On the festival it says, melechet avodah, don't do laborious work. So it gives it an adjective, which means that it means a laborious work is proscribed on the festivals. However, pleasurable work, work that's there for the food, is permissible. So these become the two verses upon which this law is based. In the context of our sicha, I'm going to show it to you quickly on the screen. Firstly, our own Torah reading of this week in verse 16. I quote, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, on the seventh day is a holy convocation. No work may be performed on them, but what is eaten by any soul, that alone may be performed for you. So there's a but. It's prescribed from work, but food prep is allowed. That's how it's presented in Exodus in today's Torah portion. When we look at Leviticus, over here, it begins the chapter with the laws of Shabbos. And it tells you, it's Leviticus chapter 23, verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel and tell them the Lord's appointed holy days that you shall designate as holy occasion. These are my holy days. And it's going to go down the whole list. First is Shabbos. So in verse 3, it says, 6 days you may work, may be performed. On the seventh day, it's a complete rest day. Holy occasion. You shall not perform any work. It doesn't qualify what type of work. Kol Milacha. But then when it speaks about the holidays, it does qualify it. And we take a look only a couple of verses later in verse 7. It talks about Passover. And it says, on the first day, it shall be a holy occasion for you. You should not perform any work of labor. In the Hebrew, Melechet Avodah. On Shabbat, it just says, Kol Melecha. All work. On the holiday, it says, Kol Melechet Avodah, work of labor. You might say laborious work, to the exclusion of work of pleasure, which would be food prep. And this, the Torah is consistent with this language throughout the entire chapter. You scroll down, now we're talking about Passover, then we fall into Shavuos, verse 31, Kol Melechet Avodah Lo Ta'asu, in verse 21, you shall not perform any work of labor. Again, it's qualified. The same thing, Rosh Hashanah, in verse 25, do not perform any work of labor. When it comes to Yom Kippur, verse 28, wouldn't you know it? Over here, it's not qualified. It doesn't say, Kol Melechet Avodah Lo Ta'asu, don't do work of labor. It simply says, Kol Melecha Lo Ta'asu, don't perform any work, because Yom Kippur is just like Shabbos. And then it continues with Sukkot, and similarly with Sukkos, verse 35, again, it qualifies, don't perform work of labor. So these become the two verses upon which the permissibility of work on the holidays is based, as distinct from Shabbos, A, the verse in our portion, and B, in Leviticus, and as I mentioned, it's also in the book of Numbers, but suffice it for our discussion today to focus on these two. And again, what is the difference? Let me show you on a little spreadsheet that I prepared that looking from the top, the first part of the spreadsheet, all the way through line 6, you read across. So it's not yet a spreadsheet until you get to line 10. So what are we saying? The allowance of food preparation on Yom Tov, e.g. cooking, carrying. There could be other examples. Back in the day, slaughtering an animal, etc. So line 5 is Exodus. That's our portion. Don't do malach on Yom Tov. However, for food you may. So there's a but. Do not, but you're allowed. In Leviticus, it just says it simple. Don't do meleches avodah, laborious work, which qualifies it that that's the work that's proscribed. However, work for pleasure, for food, is allowed. And there's going to be two approaches or three approaches of how this is looked at by the halachists, by the decisors, and by the Rishonim, the early commentaries, and by the Talmud itself. And the three approaches on your screen, columns B, C, and D. Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel according to Tosfos, Beis Hillel according to Rashi. And Beis Shammai says, we're now in column in line 12. Beis Shammai says, the food preparation on Yom Tov is prohibited, just like Shabbos. However, it's been allowed for the sake of joy. It's really a prohibition, but that prohibition is overridden in order to celebrate the holiday. That's one side of the equation, one extreme. Cooking on a holiday is just like Shabbat, it's prohibited. We allow it, it's an allowance because of joy. The example I'm giving is in line 15. You're allowed to break Shabbos to save a life. Or you're allowed to eat non-kosher to save your life. To someone in my community now who has to eat non-kosher marshmallows, which are really non-kosher. They have a gelatin in them, whatever it is, because it's better for something within his system. And the Rav has ruled that he should eat them. But he knows he's eating non-kosher. He's violating the rule. The rule is that the treif, but he's allowed to eat them, and he maybe is encouraged to eat them because it overrides it. And that's a little bit how Beis Shammai looks at the permissibility of cooking on Yom Tov. Nominally, it's prohibited, but we override it, the Torah says, for the sake of joy. Whereas the other side of the equation is, column D, Beis Hillel, according to Rashi, it was never prohibited to begin with. The Torah says on Shabbos, all 39 laws are prohibited. On Yom Tov, the laws of cooking and carrying are not prohibited. They're just not. Why? For the sake of joy, for the sake of food prep. But they're not prohibited to begin with. And then we have the balanced, nuanced approach, which is the middle column, which incidentally, that's how the Shulchan Aruch, the code of law, by and large, comes down with. Beis Hillel, according to Tosfos. On the one hand, it agrees with Shammai, on the other hand, it agrees with Rashi. And that is, it was prohibited. The Torah did include it in the headline prohibition. On the other hand, that prohibition has been made permissible. It's not that it's a prohibition that the Torah says, I'm allowing you to override it. It's been permitted. What are examples of the differences between these three columns? So let's look at line 15. If we hold that, like Beis Shammai, the Yom Tov food preparation is a prohibition just like Shabbos. However, we allow it to be overridden for the sake of the holiday. The example I'm giving is like saving a life. So you break Shabbos, not only to save someone else's life, your own life. You eat treif to save a life, to save your life. But you're very narrow, you're very careful. When you're going to save a life on Shabbos, you don't also go shopping in the meantime. Because you are violating a Torah rule with something else that takes precedence. That's how Beis Shammai seems to look at this. The cooking on Yom Tov. Beis Hillel, according to the other extreme Rashi, it was never forbidden to begin with. And therefore, this is similar to someone doing work on a weekday. There's nothing wrong, according to Beis Hillel, according to Rashi, column D, there's nothing wrong with cooking or carrying on Yom Tov. It's just like carrying on a Monday. It never was prohibited to begin with. And then the nuanced approach of column C, Beis Hillel, according to Tosfos, it was prohibited by Torah, and then Torah allowed it. It didn't allow you to override a prohibition. The prohibition was actually undone. It was allowed for the sake of joy. The example that I suggest, this is my own suggestion, that the firstborn fast on Erev Pesach. But then we say, well, we want them to be able to eat because it's not a good day to fast. You're going to come into the holiday hungry. So if they attend a bris, or if they attend a siyum, a tractate of a mesechta, of the tractate of the Talmud, they're now allowed to eat. But they're allowed to eat a whole day. We don't say they could only eat during that meal. It's not like every bite they are doing a prohibition. There is a prohibition. The fast exists for them. However, when they go to a seal or a bris, the fast became permitted. And now they have no more concept of fasting. Just using it by way of example for clarification. And therefore, according to this column, this is a more of a nuanced approach. Where did they get the basis for it? It seems from the Sikha that the way it's looked at is the following. Remember, you see in the top of the screen, there is the verses of Exodus in today's Torah portion of Parshas Bo, and there's the verses in Vayikra Leviticus in chapter 23. So it depends how they look at it. Beis Shammai, base the ruling on Exodus. That basically, what does it say in Exodus? On a holiday, you can't do any malacha. And then it says, but. The headline, though, is just like Shabbos. All malacha is prohibited, period. There's a but. I'm allowing you to override it. If it's permitted, why would the Torah say, don't do it? But. So that's squarely where Shammai seems to take their ruling. The fact that in Leviticus, in the portion of Emor, it says that what? It qualifies that only laborious work is forbidden, because that's based on what was already explained in Exodus, but Exodus is the foundation. Conversely, when we look at column D to the other side of the extreme, Rashi, according to Beis Hillel, he bases it squarely on Leviticus, it seems. The approach will be, this seems to be Nachmanides' approach according to this Sikha, that since Leviticus says You want to know the law of Shabbos, don't do work. You want to know the law of Yom Tov, don't do laborious work. So if it doesn't go into the category of laborious work, it's meleches hanah, it's work of pleasure for food, not meleches avodah, not laborious work. It's not prohibited to begin with. That's a biblical verse over and over by every holiday. Laborious work is proscribed. The adjective laborious is in there. And therefore, if it's non-laborious work, it never was forbidden to begin. The fact that Exodus, how would that way of thinking, the column D people, Rashi, it seems, and Nachmanides, how would they deal with Exodus? That in Exodus, it seems to say all work is forbidden and that there's a but. They see that as a way of explaining what's coming later in Leviticus. But Leviticus is post-Sinai and it's most unequivocal. Laborious work is forbidden. Work of food never was forbidden to begin. It's like working on a weekday. Whereas, according to the middle column, the column C, the nuanced approach, Tosfos, according to Beis Hillel, according to Tosfos, it seems that's a combination of both verses. On the one hand, there's Exodus. There is a concept of the prohibition. That verse stands, so to speak. No work shall be done. That's a headline. There's a but. There's a permissibility. But the permissibility is so much that it becomes permitted to the point that when we come to Leviticus, the Torah doesn't bother repeating that but, and the Torah just to begin with says laborious work is prohibited, non-laborious work is permissible. However, the process that we got to Leviticus is Exodus. Why did it become only prescribed work of laborious work? Because of what it says in Exodus. But in essence, all work is prohibited as per Exodus, but for food. And that becomes the middle column. So we have the three approaches, and we have also the biblical verses as their roots, some of which I'm telling you in terms of the biblical basis is explicit in the Sicha. A little bit, the middle column is a little bit of my own extrapolation. And God forgive me if I'm not precise there. The application between these two approaches, what's the application in Jewish law? It's always fun to analyze and split the hairs of where the basis of the law is. But if there is an actual practical difference in halacha, as we often ask in the Talmud and in the Achrenim, the later commentaries, the Rishonim, the early commentaries, when we try to understand an analysis, we ask, Lamai nafka mina, what's the difference in practicality? If there's a difference in practical law, it's much more interesting to understand and much more important to understand the different bases, the different perspectives of the chakira, as it's called, of the analysis. So the application in line 20 is the following. According to Beis Shammai, intention matters, because I'm doing something that's a violation of Jewish law when I cook on Yom Tov. So it matters that I'm cooking for Yom Tov. According to column D, Rashi, the other extreme, intention doesn't matter. Cooking on Yom Tov, carrying on Yom Tov is never prohibited. It's like doing it on a Monday. Doesn't matter what my intention is. It is a permissible act. And according to the middle column of Tosfos and Beis Hillel, intention matters as well. It's a prohibited act which has been made permissible. And as we'll see, sometimes we need to know that you're doing it for the sake of the holiday. And the main difference is line 23. The main difference between the three columns, which becomes the basis for the rest of the Sicha. If you get line 23 clear, the rest of the Sicha is just an easy downhill battle. That when is it permitted? When is it permitted to cook and carry on Shabbos on Yom Tov? In other words, for the sake of food prep, to break the laws that violate Yom Tov, that would violate normally Shabbos on a holiday. When is it permitted? So according to Beis Shammai, it's only for actual holiday food prep. Which means I'm not allowed to even prepare food for another person, which is what I'm writing on line 27. When I'm preparing food on a holiday, I'm violating the holiday. It's I'm giving it an example, a little bit of extreme. I'm getting into a car to go save a life. I'm eating something trafe in order to save my life. I'm mindful that I'm breaking the holiday, but I'm told you're allowed to break it because in this instance, I'm celebrating with food. So I can therefore only cook if I need to eat, but I can't cook for someone else. Let's assume I'm fasting on the holiday. In a case where I'm allowed to, because I had a terrible dream, I'm doing a tainis chalom, a dream fast, or whatever, the rare occasion when I'm fasting, I'm allowed to cook, because cooking is a prohibition according to Beis Shammai. Biblical, just like Shabbos. It's only a prohibition that we override. But if only it had been overridden for the sake of eating. I can't cook even for another person. That would be a pretty strict way to go. Be an issue. If the rule would be like Shammai, I don't know. I'm assuming every person would have to cook for themselves. I don't know. But that's not the halacha, regardless. According to column C, the middle, when is it permitted? I'm on line 23. When there's some need for Yom Tov, even not directly food related. How does this middle column look at it? There is a prohibition of doing all malacha on Yom Tov, everything. It's been made permissible in order for you to have simcha. But now that it's made permissible, it's a permitted malacha. It's not a prohibited malacha that we're allowing you to override. It's been suspended. It's been made permissible because of joy. So now the law has much broader parameters. It's permissible for any joy of the holiday, not just strictly for food prep. If it's a melacha that is normally involves food prep, like cooking and carrying or slaughtering an animal, those melachas now become permissible, even if it's not about food. If it's not about eating, it's about other joys of the holiday, it becomes permissible. It becomes a much broader application. And therefore, the example in line 27 would be, I can cook for other people. But as we'll see soon, I can even cook to create an aroma in the house, which is not food related. Because being that this prohibition, yes, it's a prohibition, but the Torah then made it permissible because of the holidays. It made it permissible in a broader sense. I don't have to be so narrow. I'm not violating a law that I have to make sure I'm kosher every moment. And therefore, as long as it's adding to the holiday's joy, I'm allowed to do it. Certainly, I can cook for others, but I can only cook for other people who are celebrating the holiday, because it has to have some benefit to the holiday. Whereas in column D, Rashi's approach with the Beis Hillel, that cooking, that food prep is completely permissible, via cooking, carrying, and the like, I can cook non-kosher. I can give it to my pet, give it to my non-Jewish friend, which certainly over there, there's no celebration of the holiday. It's allowed because it's like cooking on a Monday. I can carry, I can cook on a holiday, just like on a Monday. There's no buts, there's no limitations. And that would become the difference of that column. So now I brought some examples in my class, in my Chabad House group. We filled this out together, but here I filled it out before. But if you want to follow, if you want to enjoy this, try to figure out your own answer before you see mine. In line 30, I'm cooking more than I need. There's a question. Since the Torah allows you to cook on Yom Tov, do I have to cook exactly as much as I need? Or can I throw the whole chicken? I took the whole chicken out of the freezer. It's been defrosted. But I only have a couple of people, and all I need maybe is a half a chicken. But I'm inclined to just cook the whole chicken. I'll use it for later. I want to put it back in the fridge, in the freezer. It's defrosted. I'll throw it into the pot. It's the same difference. Or do I have to? The language in halacha is tzarech letzamtzim. Do you have to be concise and precise or not? So this becomes the difference. And if you hold by column B, Shammai, you can't cook anymore. Remember, every act of cooking is a violation of a prohibition. It's a prohibition that we allow you to override. You got to be strict with it. I imagine if we were the ruling in halacha and the Jewish law would be like Shammai, we would be sitting there with measuring cups. Because you're doing a prohibition that's been permitted in order for you to enjoy the holiday. It's only permitted to the point that you need it for your enjoyment. Whereas, according to the other two, if the prohibition is a prohibition, but we made it permitted for the sake of the joy, it's permitted. You don't have to be so concise and so precise. We're much looser. Remember, the parameters are broader. So you're cooking the whole chicken, and who knows, maybe another guest will come. It's easier anyway to cook. And this is why the halacha is you're allowed to slaughter an animal, even though you only need a tiny percentage of the animal. Whereas according to column B, not necessarily would you be allowed to. Because in Jewish law, we always go by the majority. The guy doesn't eat 50% of that animal. He needs 5%. He's allowed to if he prefers meat over chicken. And it just, even though it's only a couple of people. But according to column B, no. You got to be precise. Whereas according to column C, where the ruling is, yes, it was a prohibition, but Torah permits it. It's now become suspended. You're allowed to cook on Yom Tov as long as it has some benefit. And there's some benefit of allowing you not to be sitting there with a measuring cup and being precise. Just cook away. It's okay. And certainly in column D, according to the Rashi approach, where it never was prohibited to begin with, cooking on Yom Tov is like cooking on a regular weekday. Certainly you can cook. You can cook 5 cows. Same thing, cooking for the next day. It seems. Everything we're studying is all in theory. You need to ask a Rav these questions. But it seems, and this is based on one of the footnotes as well, that cooking for the next day, according to Shammai's ruling, is for sure not allowed because cooking is prohibited. Except what you need. Even according to column C, the Tosfos approach, that it's a prohibition that's been made permissible, so it has to have some benefit for the holiday. I'm cooking for tomorrow is no benefit. You're not allowed. Whereas according to the Rashi approach, that cooking is the Yom Tov, is like cooking on a weekday. You're allowed to cook for the next day and cook for the whole month. There's rabbinic prohibitions of hachana. You're not allowed to prepare for another day because it's going to distract you from focusing on that day. But according to the strict issue of cooking, the biblical prohibition of cooking on Yom Tov, according to column D, it would be permitted to cook for the next day. Another example in line 36, I mentioned it earlier, cooking for aroma. You're cooking for aroma, not because of food. So according to B, it's prohibited because, again, you're literally violating Jewish law, except if it involves food. According to column C and D, it's permitted. Why? According to column D, because, again, it's like a weekday. According to column C, it's not a weekday. It's Shabbos. But remember what column D's conclusion was. Being that Torah permitted this malacha on Yom Tov for the sake of joy, it becomes permitted, as we said here, for any need of the holiday, even not directly food related. And therefore, I'm allowed to cook for aroma. It's a need for the holiday. It enhances my holiday. I want to just point out, you can't decide to do needle pointing. Somebody asked me in my class, what about needle pointing? If I'm a person who I like needle pointing and it calms me, and it gives me pleasure, or for that matter, I like to paint, I like to draw, I like to play music. So I all of a sudden have all kind of permissibility, so God forbid. No, the permissibility of Yom Tov is only food related, and therefore it applies to melacha, types of work which relate to food, which is cooking and carrying by and large. Those two laws, according to the middle column, which again becomes the halacha and the Shulchan Aruch, those laws now become permitted across the board. Since it was permitted for the need of food, it's now permitted for any need that enhances the holiday according to this approach. but not that I could stop needle pointing and painting because it gives me pleasure. Those are laborious works. I don't care your intention. However, food prep work, cooking and carrying, which are needed in order to be able to move around and pick up a bag of sugar and some onions from your neighbor and what have you. And all these things are permitted according to this column. It's not like a Monday, but it's been permitted for the sake of Yontif, and therefore you're allowed to cook up for an aroma. You're allowed to cook more than you need, but not for the next day. That's no longer for the need of the holiday. What about line 38, carrying food items? This is much more fun the way we did it in our class where we filled it out together. Carrying non-food items. You're allowed to carry on Yom Tov, and the reason is, the basis of the law is, because you're allowed to carry for the sake of food. And the sages deemed, halacha deems, that if I'm not allowed to carry, I won't be able to have all the food prep that I need. However, what if I'm carrying non-food items? Carrying my talis, I'm carrying a sitter, I'm carrying a pair of shoes. For example, in our Chabad house, people have to walk a couple of miles to shul. I encourage them to wear sneakers. But they come to shul, they want to look nice in their Shabbos shoes. So some of them will leave their shoes in the Chabad house someplace in the coat room. On the holiday, they can carry the shoes. Or not. Or what about if I'm going over to your house, Yanta, for lunch? And I remember as I'm about to leave to your house that you lent me a book, a phone book or some other thing months ago, and I forgot to return it. Oh, I'm going to your house. I'm going to return it. I'll throw it into the baby stroller. Are these things allowed or not? So according to column B, which is Beis Shammai, that says that the prohibitions are prohibited. You're violating Shabbos because you're violating Yom Tov by cooking and carrying. But you're allowed to override that violation, that prohibition, because of food. It's very limited. If it's non-food items, prohibited. You can't carry your talis, you can't carry your shoes, your sitter. You may be able to carry a pot, maybe you have to carry some sugar. According to the other extreme column, the Rashi's approach, that it's completely been permitted. It never was prohibited. It's like doing it on a Monday. And because the Torah permitted, the Torah never prohibited cooking and carrying on Yom Tov. So what's the difference if I'm carrying food items, I'm carrying my talis, or I'm carrying a book that I have to give you back? And then it's not going to enhance your Yom Tov in any way. It's a phone book, but I have to give it back to you. Carrying is not a prohibition on Yom Tov, according to this column. According to the approach of column C, the nuanced approach of Tosfos, carrying has been made permitted when it helps Yom Tov, even beyond food. So here it becomes nuanced. And this is very relevant because this is Jewish law. I can carry my talis, I can carry a sitter, I can carry a pair of shoes if I need them. But I can't carry something that I have to give you back because I'm on the way to your house. I might take it anyway. I can't carry books that I'll need for next week. I can only carry what's needed. And this becomes very relevant. You might say that just like you check your pockets on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, if you take your talis bag, check your talis bag. You can't just take your whole talis bag because Yom Tov you can carry. Needless to say, you can't carry your tefillin in your talis bag. But you can't even carry, there's other things, there's your tzedakah money, you also can't carry it. But what about if you have in your talis bag, you have some pens or you have some papers or you have some other stuff that the weekday related, you could carry a pair of reading glasses because that's going to enhance your Yom Tov and that's allowed according to the middle column. But if there's something in that talis bag that is, you know what I mean? Even maybe it's a Torah book that you're not using on Yom Tov, you probably shouldn't carry. You probably should take it out of the talis bag. Only if it's needed that day. The same thing is carrying keys. We had a lot of fun in my class when we prepared this chart in real time. Carrying keys. So it's very clear in column B. You can't carry keys on Yom Tov. You can't eat keys. The exception would be the challah keys, the shlissel challah. But keys are not food items. You can carry challah, you can't carry keys. And that would be biblically proscribed according to this opinion of Shammai. According to Rashi's opinion, you can carry keys all day long. Carrying is permitted on Yantif. And according to the middle column, you can carry, and this is important that people don't know, you can carry keys that are needed. And that's why, for example, if you have a ring of keys, you know, typically, I know myself, I would come to shul, to Chabad house on Yantif, with the car before Yantif. And you leave the keys in my shtender, like you do on a regular Friday night, and you pick it up at the end of Shabbos. But on Yantif, what would I typically do? I would take off the car key, because it's muktzah, you can't carry it. I would take off the car key, the clicker, and I would leave my whole bunch of keys. Key to the shul, key to my house, key to my the key to my storage room, all kind of keys. And I would walk home with those keys all Yantif because I'm not carrying anything that's prohibited. But that's wrong. According to column D, it's okay. But according to column C, according to Tosfos, which this is Jewish law, you need to be careful. You have to look at your ring of keys before Yantif if you in fact plan to carry them around. And you can only use the keys, carry the keys that you need, the key to, in my case, the key to the house, the key to the shul, and that's it. The other keys that you're not going to use on Yantif, you and I know those keys you don't really end up using much at all. You certainly can't carry it around on Yantif, even according to column C, because there is a prohibition of carrying on Yantif. Only Torah permits it. It's made it mutter. It's not nitche, the language of the halacha is that column B is nitche, that we override the prohibition. And on column C, it's mutter. We permit the prohibition, but the prohibition is still existent, and therefore it has to have a need for yomtiv, even if it's not strictly for food. Line 44, and this I'm saying again, you have to check with your local Orthodox rabbi. It's not a halachic ruling, but it seems from the sikha and footnotes that perhaps one might argue that what about if I have a job as food prep? You know, I'm invited to come as a waiter or a cook or a mashgiach at the big Pesach program in Florida. It's after Corona and everybody's going to make the money that they didn't make last year over the programs. And I come as a waiter or a cook. Is that allowed? Now, we're not discussing now the permissibility of getting paid for a job. That's a separate discussion. The permissibility of getting paid for a job, and this is not just if you're going to do food prep, if you're a rabbi or you're a chazan or you're a mashgiach, even if you're not strictly doing things that break Shabbos, it's a problem. It's a rabbinic prohibition to do things that make your money on Shabbos because it's a distraction or whatever the reasons are, the rabbinic prohibition. And the rule is that the rabbinic prohibition, anything that the rabbis prohibited, they can also allow in certain conditions, which is how they allowed it, that the rabbi's allowed to get paid because he's really paid for the preparation. The cantor gets paid because he's paid for the preparation. My joke is that any rabbi or cantor who didn't prepare shouldn't get paid anyway because he's not going to do the right job. But nominally, that's how the rabbis get around it, being that the prohibition of getting paid for work on Shabbos is not a biblical one anyway. It's not one of the 39 laws. It's a rabbinic prohibition because if you get paid for your work on Shabbos, you are going to spend your Shabbos doing work, plus you can end up writing and you end up breaking laws. It's a very strong prohibition, but albeit not one of the 39 laws. So the sages said, look, if you're getting paid for the prep, we'll allow it. Or other ways, you get paid for the year, you don't get paid for the day. So it's muvla, so-called, it's swallowed up, and it's allowable, but there's issues, and it's an all separate discussion, not really the theme of this sikha at all. So let's put that aside. Let's assume that whoever is paying the person who he was hired to work for the Pesach program has worked that issue out. He's paying him for the whole 8 days, not just for the holidays of the first and the last day, and it's permitted. He's paying for the prep. He's paying for the travel time. It doesn't matter. But what about the actual malacha? He's not a waiter on the floor. He's actually in the kitchen and he's cooking. He's flipping the burgers. He's actually doing the malacha bishul of cooking and carrying and all other things, bited, all kind of other laws of Shabbos selection and slicing things that you wouldn't be able to do on Shabbos, and he's doing it. He's in the kitchen staff on Yontif in that hotel. Is he or is he not allowed? So this is becoming interesting, and I'm just saying this by as a suggestion, that it seems as follows. In column B, according to Shabbat, which holds that the prohibition of cooking is absolutely in place and it's only overridden for the sake of your eating, so certainly not allowed. I can't even cook for someone else. I certainly can't cook as a job. Conversely, in column D, that cooking has been made permitted. I'm allowed to cook for a Gentile. I'm allowed to cook for non-kosher. I can, if you're allowed, in the case where halacha allows you to use it, I cook for my pet, I cook for tomorrow, we said, cook for next week. There's no prohibition. The same thing with carrying, according to that column. If that's the case, so what's wrong if I'm cooking for a job? Other than the rabbinic prohibition of not getting paid. But if that's handled, what's wrong? Column C. So since column C, if I'm correct, that the basis of column B is the verse in Exodus. I'm going to scroll back up. That the basis of column B is the verse in Exodus, which proscribes work on Yontif and then permits food. And the basis for column D is the verse in Leviticus that, to begin with, only proscribes laborious work. And therefore, non-laborious work, food and carrying, is permitted to begin. Whereas in the middle column, it's a combination, it's a hybrid. That's a very popular word nowadays. It's a hybrid between Exodus and Leviticus, which means it's essentially prohibited. But now we permit it. And we permit it only when it's non-laborious. And that's how we sort of combine both verses. One might say that if I'm doing it as a job, it's laborious work, even though it's food related and it's pleasure for that day, but it's not for me, or I'm not doing it as a pleasure for people around me. I'm doing it as a job and it might constitute laborious work. Some would say, and most would probably say, that even column D would be prohibited, but that's another conversation. I'm just putting it as an example for understanding the three columns. The takeaway that the Rebbe gives is Shir lasted longer than I had hoped, but the takeaway that the Rebbe gives is that halacha is based on that middle column there, right? Halacha is based not on the fact that there never was a prohibition and we at all, as Rashi, also not on the fact that there's a prohibition in place and we override it, but on the fact that there's a prohibition in place, but it's been made permissible. And it's a very short takeaway at the end, but what does that imply? That the idea of Hashem wanting you to have simcha on Yontif, to have joy on Yontif, is so important. Some people will say simcha is nice, but make sure you're keeping Yontif. Make sure you're doing your davening and you're learning and your halacha. The simcha on Yontif, okay. If I have time, I'll do it too. No. It's so important that Torah says it's an absolute violation of halacha, of a malacha technically, and the Torah doesn't say you can override it. The Torah says it's permitted. That's how important Simcha is on Yontif. Says the Rebbe. The Torah books and Hasidic writings certainly tell us that every day we have part of the energies of Yontif. Yontif is only a few days a year, but we're supposed to feel them every single day and feel their impact. And therefore, every single day, says the Rebbe, this points to the importance of Simcha in our service of Hashem. And the footnote points to the Rambam, Hilchas Lulav, which says that the Avodah Gedolah, it's an awesome thing, and it's an important thing, and a challenging thing to serve Hashem every single day with joy. This is the end of Hilchas Sukkah Lulav, the end of the laws of Yontif. Why does Rambam segue into the fact that a person should feel the joy of Hashem every single day, especially when they do a mitzvah, and even otherwise? Why is it in the laws of Yontif? Because Yontif is every day. There's a spark of Yontif every day. And the Rebbe it's said very short, but I think it needs to be elaborated on and personalized, that Hashem Torah is teaching us that simcha every day serving Hashem with joy, living every day with lightheartedness, with optimism, with positivity, is so important that even if it's prohibited, it becomes a permissible, it becomes even a mitzvah. We're coming to Yud Shvat. I want to close with this along those lines. The Rebbe said in a famous Fabringen of Shabbos, Parshas B'Shalach, in Tufshin Yud Dalet 1954, which was the Shabbos right after Yud Shvat, when the Rebbe finished the 4 years of his leadership. And the Rebbe had a very joyous Fabringen. And the Rebbe said some L'chaim. And it was more of a little bit of a, I wasn't there, obviously. I just read the transcript in the Hanukkah. But it was more of like a Yom Tov Tikkun, almost like a Simchas Torah type for bringing. It was a lot of joy and openness. And the Rebbe, who accepted the leadership, you know, very, very resistantly and humbly throughout all the years, and certainly the first years, but in that for bringing, the Rebbe sort of embraced the leadership with a joyous thing. And the Rebbe spoke then that there is just like a person has a vineyard. For the first 3 years, it's arlo, or a fruit field, fruit trees, orchard. First 3 years, you cannot use it. And even the fourth year, it's netan avoi, and you have to eat it with certain conditions. But after the 4 years, it's yours to keep. The Rebbe similarly implied that the kerem chabad, the vineyard of chabad, and the leadership that was imparted, the Rebbe didn't go so far as to say that it was given from the previous Rebbe to himself, but that the previous Rebbe is the owner, and he is the one, the caretaker, the shepherd who's been given the job to take care. And the Rebbe's humility, equal only to that of Moses, worded it in that fashion. But the owner, the Bala Keren, and the owner of the vineyard, being the Friede Kerebbe, the previous Rebbe, gave us, so to speak, referring to himself, that he's the caretaker of this vineyard. The first 3 years, it's not yours yet. Even the fourth year, it's still qualifications. But now that the 4th year is over, so with the power vested in him from the Bala Kerem, the Friga Kerebbe, the Rebbe says, I'm sort of taking ownership of this vineyard, and therefore I want to make a statement. People don't know about this because it's not as popular. Everyone knows when the Rebbe accepted the leadership formally. And Yud Shvat, Tufshin Yud Aleph, he made a statement, a famous statement that there's three loves, love of God, love of Torah, and love of Jews, and they all go together, they're inseparable. The Rebbe made a statement in Tufshin Yud Dalet when he finished the 4 years. And the Rebbe said this, all those of Anash, Chassidim, we know to the Rebbe, every Yid is Chassidim, all those of Anash, who weren't blessed with the bracha of having children, Zahra Chaya V'Kayama, should be blessed with Zahra Chaya V'Kayama, blessed with children. All those of Anash who weren't blessed with Parnasa Barachava, with livelihood in abundance, should be blessed with Parnasa Barachava, should be blessed with livelihood in abundance. Very powerful statements the Rebbe was saying on such a Shabbos. He's sort of commanding the heavens with the power of his Nasius that was given to him, that this has to take place. And then the Rebbe said one more thing. One more thing. What do you think that thing is? He commanded heavens that whoever needs children should have it, and whoever needs parnasa. What's the third thing? The Rebbe said, the olive is from Potiver and from Modin Shcheder is on Potiver and from the Modin Shcheder. All those who are having trouble ridding themselves of melancholy should be able to rid themselves of melancholy. It's an extraordinary thing. The Rebbe puts that on par with the other two. Because it seems to me that the Rebbe's nesiyas, the Rebbe's approach was besimcha. And even though in former generations, even among Chassidim, which are known for their simcha, there was a place of melancholy. Even in Tanya, there's a place for making a self-reckoning that brings you down. The Rebbe decided that for our generation, A, because we're closer to Mashiach and we don't need the melancholy, and B, because we're closer to Mashiach, we're also a lower generation, and we can't handle the melancholy. But bottom line is that Rebbe's approach is simcha, the chatchila ribber, always with joy, to the point that melancholy is going to destroy everything. And therefore, the Rebbe said, what is my wish, my number three wish, that if you have the melancholy, you should get rid of it. And it fits right into the theme of this sikha, that simcha is so important that it overrides the prohibition. It becomes permissible. It becomes encouraged. And as the Rebbe famously said to one of the Hasidim, who went into a private meeting with the Rebbe in the early years, this may have happened to numerous people, but I heard it from one or two. And they wrote a note to the Rebbe, as Hasidim would typically do in days of old. And it was a very melancholy note, and it was complaining about their inner flaws. And they expected the Rebbe to give them direction of how to make a tikkun and how to fix their midas and how to fix themselves innerly. The Rebbe didn't want us to make a reckoning of our practical behavior. Like if someone would say, I don't daven well, the Rebbe would say, I want you to daven well. I don't learn well. We should start to learn. But the inner reckoning means that somebody said, when I daven, I'm not fully feeling it. When I learn, I'm not learning always for the sake of heaven, this type of stuff. Self-analysis, which in past generations was considered bona fide, and people would spend a lot of time on the inner workings. And the Rebbe pretty much blew that out of the water. Your daily reckoning, your cheshbon ha-nefesh that you make every day or every month, should be practical. Are you or are you not? Don't tell me your motivations. Forget your motivations. If you just do it, and the motivations will follow. That's the Rebbe's approach. So this chassid went into the Rebbe. This is a few years after the Nesiyas began, and he came to New York for the first time. And he was expecting the Rebbe, and he wrote all these melancholy things and expecting the Rebbe to give him direction of how to overcome his misguidedness and his inner flaws. And instead, this was a yeshiva bucher. And after the yechidus, it was before a holiday, and he was planning to travel home for Yontif. He lived overseas for Pesach. So the Rebbe looks at him when he reads the note, and the Rebbe says, when you travel home for Pesach, you're going to fly over the ocean. He doesn't know where the Rebbe is going with this. And the Rebbe says, take the melancholy and throw it into the ocean. That was his first introduction and his first yechidus to the Rebbe. The story I just told you happened with Rabbi Beryl Shemta from Detroit, who was then a yeshiva bucher, an old yeshiva bucher, and I believe it was 1953. His first yechidus, and he had just come to New York and spent some time with the Rebbe, and going home for Yom Tov, I believe, to London. And the Rebbe, instead of giving him some kind of tikkun, how to fix those inner flaws, which was considered completely valid conversation in previous generations of Hasidim, the Rebbe told him, you're going over the ocean. Very good. Drop the melancholy in the ocean. Let's talk about things that matter. Because the Rebbe does no place for that type of introspection, because he sees us as who we are. Conversely, the Rebbe sees us as good foot soldiers and encourages us with joy to move forward to the best behavior in thought, speech, and action.